Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Channa Vallabha Girivaradhari. Gopi Channa Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana, Braja Channa Randana. Yashoda Nandana, Braja Channa Randana. Yamuna Tira Vangachari. Yamuna Tira Vannachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari.
Paramahansa Pyogu Chakacharya Starthi Shima Hrita Vangas Esi Bhakti Vranta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Nanti Kori Vaishnava Vinda Ki Jai Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Prema Nandi. So, before starting today's class, let's discuss a little bit that today is the disappearance day of Sri Ishvara Puri, spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. We heard a little this morning about how Ishvara Puri visited Advaita Acharya dressed in disguise. He was a Vaishnava sannyasi, but he wasn't dressed as a Vaishnava sannyasi. But he was very effulgent, and Advaita Acharya said, "This looks like a Vaishnava sannyasi dressed in disguise." And he said, no, I am just a Shudra, but today I've achieved the perfection of life by seeing your lotus feet." But Mukundadatta, he wanted to expose the ruse, so he began singing a kirtan about Krishna's leelas. And he sang so nicely, and when Ishvara Puri heard it, he began rolling on the ground and crying, and the ground became very wet with his tears. And then it was, the jeep was up, and he was exposed that he was really a great Vaishnava. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that Madhavendra Puri was the root of this magnificent tree of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, and that Ishvara Puri was the sapling. And then Lord Chaitanya blossomed and flourished into this gigantic tree that's taking over the whole universe and bestowing genuine love of God upon everyone everywhere. And Ishvara Puri served his spiritual master Madhavendra Puri so well, even when Madhavendra Puri had become completely an invalid, it pleased Madhavendra Puri very much. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a description of another disciple of Madhavendra Puri who became critical of his spiritual master, and then he Ramachandra Puri even criticized Lord Chaitanya. So we see that serving the spiritual master nicely is actually the key to success in devotional service. So today we're starting, I think we're starting chapter 6, right? So we should be in third canto, chapter 6, verse 1.
Six, one, two.
So, one has Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rishir Uvacha. Iti tasan sushakti nam.
Iti tasan sushakti nam.
Sati nam asametya saha.
Sati nam asametya saha.
Prasupta loka tantranam. Prasupta loka tantranam. Nishamya gatim ishwaraha. Nishamya gatim ishwaraha. Just do the translation and purport of this. The Rishi Maitreya said, the Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahat-tattva. Please repeat. The Rishi Maitreya said, the Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe. Due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahat-tattva. Purport. There is nothing wanting in the creation of the Lord. All the potencies are there in a dormant state, but unless they are combined by the will of the Lord, nothing can progress. The suspended progressive work of creation can only be revived by the direction of the Lord. Text number 2. Kala sangyam tadadevim.
Kala sangyam tadadevim.
Vidrachchaktim urukramaha.
Vidrachchaktim urukramaha.
Prayovinshati tatvanam.
Prayovinshati tatvanam.
Ganan yugapat avishat.
Ganan
Kala Sangyam Tadadevim.
Kala Sangyam Tadadevim.
Vibrachaktim Urukramaha.
Vibrachaktim Urukramaha.
Trayo Bingshati Tatvana.
Trayo Bingshati Tatvana.
Ganam Yugapad Avishat.
Ganam Yugapad Avishat.
Thank you. Supreme Powerful, Trayakshati, 23, Tatvanam, of the elements, Ganam, all of them, Yugapat, simultaneously, Avishat, enter. Translation, the Supreme Powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. Please repeat. The Supreme Powerful Lord,
the Supreme Powerful Lord,
then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements
with the goddess Kali,
his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. Performed by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The ingredients of matter are counted as 23. The total material energy, false ego, sound, touch, form, taste, smell, earth, water, fire, air, sky, eye, ear, nose, tongue, skin, hand, leg, evacuating organ, genitals, speech, and mind. All are combined together by the influence of time and are again dissolved in the course of time. Time, therefore, is the energy of the Lord and acts in her own way by the direction of the Lord. This energy is called Kali and is represented by the dark, destructive goddess generally worshipped by persons influenced by the mode of darkness or ignorance in material existence. In the Vedic hymn, this process is described as Mula Prakritir Avikritir Avikritir Mahadai Dadyaha Prakriti Vikritaya Shakta Shoda Shaktas Tu Vikaro Na Prakritir Na Vikriti Purushaha. The energy, which acts as material nature in a combination of 23 ingredients, is not the final source of creation. The Lord enters into the elements and applies His energy called Kali. In all other Vedic scriptures, the same principle is accepted. In Brahma Sanhita 5:35, it is stated, Eko pyasa rachayatum jagat ananda koti yat chakti rasti jagat ananda chaya yat antaha andanta rasta paramanu chayanta rastam govindavadi purusham kamaham pachami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is the original personality of Godhead. By His partial plenary expansion, Mahavishnu, He enters into material nature and then into each and every universe as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and then as Kshiradakshayi Vishnu into all the elements, including every atom of matter. Such manifestations of cosmic creation are innumerable, both in the universes and in the individual atoms. Similarly, this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:42. Atava bahunaitena kinyakena tavarjuna vishtapyaham idam krishnam ekangshena stitojagat. O Arjuna, There is no necessity of your knowing about my innumerable energies which act in various ways. I enter into the material creation by my partial plenary expansion, Paramatma, or the Supersoul, in all the universes and in all the elements thereof, and thus the work of creation goes on. The wonderful activities of material nature are due to Lord Krishna, and thus he is the final cause or the ultimate cause of all causes. Om Jnana Tamarandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Miditangena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitanya Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katam Ahyam Dadati Svapakantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sahajatam Sahagana Ratanatam Rupam Kansajivam Sadvaitam Savabhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Rupam Shri Vashakam Rupam Cha Hey Krishna, Prima Sindho, Dhinam Ho, Jagatate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostate, Tapta, Kanchina, Gorangi, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhano, Sute, Devi, Pranamami, Hari, Kriye, Vamcha, Kalpa, Sarudyasha, Kripa, Sindhu, Vyevacha, Patikanam, Pavanevyo, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It's so nice to be back here in Mathura. I'm sad to leave the holy times of Vrindavan and Mathura. I seem to carry a little of the dust in my cough, and maybe a little bit jet lag, so please forgive me. If I stop talking, it's not because I'm sad of cancer, I'm just falling asleep. So, we're hearing from Maitreya Muni about the process of the creation, the first primary creation and the secondary creation, and we'll be hearing from Maitreya Muni throughout the third canto and the fourth canto. Sukadeva Goswami is reciting how this discussion between Vidura and Maitreya Muni took place. And it's very important to study this, this process of creation. Because we really have to understand that Krishna is everything. Vasudeva Vatsai Vamati Bahunam Jandanamante Jnanavamam Pupadite Vasudeva Vatsai Vamati Samahatma Sagolabhava. This is, if you want to really know how to surrender to Krishna, you have to first of all come to this knowledge of seeing Krishna in everything, and understanding the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam that Krishna exists alone with his internal energy, and he's not created and destroyed. But this, we're in this material world. So thank you. We're in this material world where it's very easy to become distracted from seeing that satisfying Krishna is the purpose of our lives and what our endeavor should be directed towards. Krishna has a deluding potency, Goddess Kali, Nala Devi, she's working under his direction, and her thankless task is to hide Krishna even though he's really everywhere. So the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam says anything that appears to have value but is not related to Krishna is an illusion. He enters into this universe, but he doesn't enter into the cosmos. He enters into the elements, or he enters into the cosmos and he doesn't enter into the cosmos. And he enters into the elements and he doesn't. So how do we understand that? In fact, Lord Brahma asks Krishna before the Chaturshloki, I want to understand your transcendental form, and I also want to understand how you assume a material form, even though you have no material form. So it's a little paradoxical. But this material form is here, this material world is created for two purposes. On the one hand, it provides a place for the rebellious, or those living entities who are misusing their independence by not serving Krishna. It provides an opportunity for them to be in illusion. Krishna creates that opportunity where they can have the illusion of having enjoyment without serving Him. But it also has another purpose, which is that it's an opportunity for those illusion-living entities to become purified, take up the process of devotional service, and to re-enter Krishna's lila with Him in pure devotional service. So if we want to achieve that pure devotional service, we want to go through these nine stages described by Srila Rupa Goswami, just to go through an argument with the become fixed and acquire a taste, a strong attachment, and you know, never leave devotional service, having real spiritual emotions and a steady ecstasy of always being aware of Krishna all the time, we really have to understand this process of creation. We really have to understand how Krishna, His hand is in everything in creation. So how does He create this world, these elements? We've heard about the 23 elements and how, as we were reading the Brahma Samhita yesterday, there was a discussion about how in their nascent state they existed but as separate entities, and the non-application of the conglomerating process is the cause of their separate existence. So the point is that we should understand this metaphysics. We should understand that the mind, the senses, the sense objects, the tanmatras like sound and form and taste and odor, they're all inert material objects. Just like the materialists say everything is inert. They don't see. The very thorough, hardcore materialistic philosophers will say that we're just a bag of some kind of inert chemicals acting according to material laws, and we have the illusion that we're thinking and we're talking and we're conscious and aware of things. But really, the best way to describe us is just to describe us as these chemicals interacting according to laws. Or they may say that consciousness is a causally emergent property, which means it doesn't have any effect on anything else, but somehow or another consciousness arises from a combination of matter in some way, and that ultimately matter is primary. But really, the mind itself is another one of the inert elements. That these are coverings of the conscious spirit souls, and without the touch of Krishna, nothing can move. So in the last chapter, Maitreya was explaining how these 23 elements, they couldn't be combined. The demigods who are in charge of the operation of the senses with their objects, they couldn't do anything, so they prayed, and they offered these beautiful prayers about how Krishna's lotus feet is like an umbrella and so forth. So then Krishna, He was able to help everything go by entering into the material universe along with His deluding potency, time. The Rasaraj Prabhu, a long time ago, maybe 25 years ago or something like that, he got this Nobel Prize winning physicist, Stack, I think it was Henry Stack, quantum mechanics guy, to actually go to the Bhaktivedanta Institute in Mumbai and to study Srimad Bhagavatam with him for, I don't know, a couple months, maybe two or three months. And Henry Stack produced a monograph about it where he described this whole description of how the material elements evolve from subtlety gross through the false ego interacting with the mode of ignorance, and described the whole thing. And one thing he noticed, or he called out, was that one difference between the materialistic sciences, different viewpoint. Henry Stapp was particularly interested in consciousness and its relation to problems in quantum mechanics. Don't ask me, I don't understand. I'll take Kacharananda's advice and not try to talk about science to scientists till I look like a fool. But he wrote that this was different, that the active role that time plays in our Vedic description is different. The time isn't just a silent observer, but time is actually moving everything, and it's Krishna's destructive energy. When he shows his universal form to Arjuna, he says, I'm time, and I've come to destroy everything. And only you, Pandavas, will remain here in this battlefield and kill everybody else. And time is the destructive energy. Anything that exists in time has a beginning and an end. And time, we'll learn later from Maitreya, how time is really an impersonal manifestation of Krishna that he uses. Guru Prabhupada describes it like a tape recorder. He uses it to create the illusion that he's not present at anything, that we're seeing something and forgetting him. So Maitreya Muni is a great jnani. He wasn't as an intimate devotee, as, of course, as Uddhava, a very special intimate devotee, but he was the disciple of Parashara Muni, and he got Krishna's personal darshan there at the time that Krishna, at this very special time, was when Krishna was giving these last instructions to Uddhava, which will be described later in the 11th canto in detail. And so he's a very expert personality to speak to, to speak to Vidura about all these things, and he'll be speaking about later on, like Guru Maharaj, and Shankar Bhatta, and other means of instructions to Prachini Bharashat about the allegory of Paranjana and all these things. And now, at this part of the Bhagavatam, through many chapters, we'll be discussing the primary and the secondary creation. And some of it, there's descriptions of who was the parents of who, of different personalities who are also qualities in the universe. And we shouldn't just, we should resist the temptation to just kind of skip over this and think, I want to get to pastimes of Krishna again. We just had this beautiful, Uddhava just described in summary the pastimes of Krishna. But we should try to study this very analytically and understand it very well, even though it's a subject that takes some work. It's like an academic subject. Because it's also Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also very relishable. And when we know it gives us a strong footing in being able to see how Krishna is everywhere, and being able to see, like in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about how, what's the verse? Naiva kinchit karomiti yukta manyata tattvavit ashnan pashyan spushan jidran. Well, I'm getting it wrong, but pralapandrishti jan gunan unmishan nimishanati. So he's saying that those who are actually seeing things as they are, even while they're opening their eyes, eating, taking things, walking, moving, doing all these sensual activities, they know, they're seeing that my senses are interacting with their objects, and I'm really not doing anything. I'm the soul sitting on this machine that's being conducted by the modes of nature. It's also described in the third chapter a bit, Tattva-vittu mahabaho bhumakarmita bhagyaho gnanam-gnanam-shivartam-tay. The subject, they don't become entangled. The illusion in the material consciousness is we think that we're doing things that is important for us to do, and then we'll change our situation in some way to become happy. That this will satisfy us, to protect us, and we become working to achieve these results without considering that the real work that we're meant to do is to serve Krishna and tolerate the waves of what material nature is doing. So we have to see through the eyes of scripture, from Shastra Chakshus, and see how these elements, fire, water, and air, and earth, it's a very different approach to things. It begins with consciousness as primary, and the different material elements, including our own senses and their objects and so forth, are connected to one another, as we were describing in the last chapter. Sky or space is connected to the sound and the sense of hearing or the ear, and then further from subtle to gross, fire is connected to form, and air is connected to touch, and so forth. How these the elements of the world, the actual elements of the world here, are being described in terms of experiences of bewildered spirit souls who are under this control of Goddess Kali. Okay. So nothing can move until Krishna comes in and sets things in motion by his time potency, which is deluding or destructive potency. And so I guess we can have some discussion at this point and come back further, I hope. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes.
Do you have a mic?
So we said nothing can move without the hand of Krishna.
He is the cause of all causes. But the scientists have proven that everything can move without a cause.
No.
they're trying to prove that there's no need. Right, there's no need to get God involved. Really, he's not really involved in anything. They can prove everything exists without him.
See? Without so, him, but they're saying there's a cause. They're caught up in this illusion of cause and effect. Evedan sasar jagre bhagavan atmamaya sarasadrupaya chaso gunamaya gunamaya. In the beginning of creation, this creation is being described over and over again. In the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter of the first canto, there's a description of creation. Then in the second canto, in chapter 5, we'll have a very good description. But Krishna creates the laws of cause and effect. In the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence, and everything is just unfolding according to this transcendental relationships of devotional service. But materialists become really interested in causes and effects, and the materialistic philosophers question, what does it mean for something to be a cause? Is there just, if something reliably happens right after something else, does that mean it's caused, or is there something else that has to like actually force it or push it? But that's the thing, they're only looking at these material causes and effects, and they're not seeing the actual original cause, which is the absolute person who's transcendental. And he has nothing to do with the material world, and at the same time, he has everything to do. So it sounds like a paradox, but like Bhakti Siddhanta says, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is both transcendent and immanent. So immanent means he's present in everything. He's present everywhere by his energy. It's his energy. So in one sense, Krishna is everything. But then he's also transcendent. That means there's nothing mundane about him. So anything we see that appears mundane, and materialists, everything they see is mundane. Everything we see that appears mundane is not connected to Krishna. It really is connected to Krishna, but they're an illusion. It's like the description of if you see a rope and you think it's a snake. There's a real rope there, but what they're taking it as is something different, is something without Krishna. I'm sorry, did you have further...
No, I think we're
just when you said cause and effect, it made me go off.
Well, there are three theories, abiogenesis, evolution, and Big Bang. You know, they're trying to establish these that could explain the origin of everything, the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin of species. And there is no, online I've seen it over and over again. There's one atheist that's a very prominent writer, and she gets like 1 million views a month, you know, and she's saying that it seems like the world just loves her, because to get 1 million views a month is a great achievement, you know, and sometimes I get bewildered with it. and she is a real atheist. Really. But she's, most of her writings is based on these theories, and you know, she's conforming and establishing them already, you know. But
so that we see Krishna's time energy is acting. His deluding potency is very powerful and is popular. And it's our job, it's an important job for ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada said, I think he said at one time that the Bhaktivedanta Institute is the most important part of his movement. It's our job that we will develop great devotees who are, you know, very fixed in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but are also qualified to discuss with people who have advanced academic knowledge in these questions of cosmology and biogenesis and so forth, to show that this is not just another sentimental faith or religion, and you have your faith and someone else has their faith. We're going to show that this is the actual, absolute truth. We have different evidences, we have different kinds of evidences, we have a whole different system and tradition. It may look to them, yes, in Prangovinda has a
problem. No, I was just saying that we are not against science or scientists. It is not nice to just say scientists are doing it.
Yeah.
We are not against science or scientists. There may be some atheists in the form of scientists doing something. It has nothing to do with science.
Right.
We appreciate science.
Yeah.
Krishna is there. So we should be very careful when we use the vocabulary that all of those scientists are there. It's not nice to say like that.
But Prabhupada often said.
No, I understand. But there are some atheists taking the position of scientists and manipulating. That's
right.
Difference.
It should will come a time when the great scientists are also devotees. That's an important point. And the but there has been, I mean, way back in the 17th century, you know, with Galileo and Descartes and so forth. For example, in the Principia Philosophia by René Descartes, who was one of the real early scientists, you know, everybody thinks of him in terms of giving more of a conception of the soul, but he was, or the mind, you know, but he was giving a conception of matter, and he was really interested in studying that in terms of mathematics and things. And but he, in the Principia, he wrote that, you know, he was mindful of what happened to Galileo and the power of the church, and he said, of course we know God created the world in 6 days, just like it says in the Bible and everything, but he created it in such a way that even if he didn't touch it, it would have created itself according to those laws. And then he went into describing the laws and how it would have created himself. So there is a strong underlying, you could say atheistic and materialistic, even though he professed himself to be you know, a serious religionist. And I'm sure Newton really was. I mean, he worked really hard on the prophecies of Daniel and some numerological studies of that. A lot of them really were theistic, you know, Christians and things. But there was a strong underlying approach that if you can explain nature, in terms of something that doesn't involve the touch of a supreme being or a higher intelligence, then we're making some kind of real advancement. I was listening to Pracharananda's class yesterday. I'll get to you, Sitadu. But you know, it was interesting because I appreciated both what Maharaj was saying and what Pracharananda was saying. And it's important that we don't, you know, start sounding like fundamentalists that are not intelligent, not thoughtful philosophers, because these are Jiva Goswami, these are the greatest philosophers. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Maitreya Muni is a great philosopher. He's taking all this knowledge from the Vedas and then he's putting it in this nice form in Srimad Bhagavatam where you can understand it very well. But what Maharaj was also saying is, you know, regardless of what Darwin said or thought he was doing or whatever, that he gave an alternative explanation for some of the evidence of design in the biological world that had become a very strong in the 18th century. I was telling you before class that one time I met Eindra. Everybody thinks, oh, Eindra is just a chanter and everything. But I met him in the stairwell in the Gurukula, and we got into a conversation, and we both had read this book of intellectual history by a historian named Arthur Anken Lovejoy called The Great Chain of Being. And the book was saying that in the 18th century, Enlightenment after Newton and everything like that, there still was this big sense of what we call natural theology, that a lot of the deists and everything were in favor of understanding that we have to understand God through the argument of design. So other arguments, like ontological arguments, other arguments for the existence of God had become less popular. And this, the great chain of being was this conception that all the different species of life showed the fullness of God, that he had created a kind of species for every kind of creature. And but this was an argument that Darwin himself was very aware of, that William Paley, a natural theologian, had written that if you find a watch on a beach, you know, and you look at it and see how it's working and ticking and telling time, you can tell that somebody created it. So how much more so if you found a human eye on the beach and saw how it worked and how the, you know, the pupil contracted and all these things, and then imagine that it really works, that it's connected to a human being so that it can see. You know, and this was, and so Darwin himself was aware that, in fact, he suppressed for some time, he didn't publish his theory of natural selection. And the Voyage of the Beagle was in the 1830s. He had this, but he knew it was going to create a big disturbance when, you know, he offered an explanation that shows how the appearance of design in biology can take place through. Okay.
He framed origins as a deistic presentation. The Scent of Man was agnostic, and that was 15 years later. I mean, he attributed it, and also in his notes earlier, from 10 years earlier, he was parsing out all kinds of, you know, how could an infinite being not anticipate any variable? I mean, even if you say chance, from our perspective, an infinite being can pick, because, and then the goal is, because it's in a Christian context, you have to get to man, because man's got to be saved by the Lord Jesus Christ. And because man has a soul, so how are you going to get to that? You've got to get to that. But
nevertheless, he was aware that he would undercut Paley, he would undercut this natural theology. Yeah,
so what? Paley's just another, you know, it's a very weak argument to depend on your theism on someone like Paley. And he just presented it as just evidence of design. He didn't present it as an absolute truth. He knew. It's just evidence. It's just arguments. You can use it, the basis, whatever. And within our tradition, natural theology is just, you know, within the realm of punditry, you can engage these arguments. But the scientists haven't proven anything absolutely. They can't do philosophy. And you can't find definitive metaphysical certainty through empiricism, through conditional sense perception. This is core to our philosophy. Because, you know, you may get to the point you're not the body. Like Descartes, I think therefore I am, like, because I'm conscious. Then you have to get into Bhakti, and you can wrangle endlessly. One last point before I hand this off to somebody else. One of the problems, one of the challenges of the 17th century that these intellectuals are looking to God's book of nature, is how it's been framed, is because of the Reformation. They see when people are going to God's book of books, you know, the book, they're getting into all kinds of crazy stuff. So they're thinking maybe there's some more solid intellectual basis in God's book. So we've got to be careful when we're criticizing scientists. We're not just trying to place one form of neophyte theism with another form of neophyte theism. Because if you just engage in that, you're going to write with atheistic scientists. Yeah. This is all nuts. We're going to explain it our own way. Yeah, well, those are arguments, and we engage in that. Why not? So you find the argument and you present it.
Okay, let's hear from the other side of the room. I got to say that I never trusted Descartes. You know, he did this thing. You know, if you read the Discourse on Method, that he does the cogito and says that there's this natural light within us, so we can tell that there's some wicked sorcerer might be completely illusioning me, but he can't convince me that I don't exist because I am the thinking person that's considering all this, therefore I exist. And then he says that same natural light within us, then he applies to that it tells us, you know, the geometric proofs and other things that we can't deny through logic. And then he takes this weird turn and says, and also that light within me tells me that God is not a wicked sorcerer, but he wants me to study the book of nature through the method of reason and observation. And it seems like he doesn't see that really there is this sorceress, Kali, who's out there all the time trying to tell us, you can enjoy your senses, you can be happy without devotion, you can, and that things can exist without the need, we can explain things without the need for having intelligent desire. Okay, I'm sorry.
Back in the purport, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, time I am, but here, time is referred, he refers to as Kali, simultaneous, as her.
Well, Krishna's talking about the universal form in the Bhagavad Gita. The universal form is time. It's not one of the transcendental forms, but he's explaining it that that there's this form that's helpful for neophytes to try to see that the universe is actually a person, a supreme person, and that material universe actually gets destroyed. It's created and destroyed, and it's not the eternal transcendental universe. So, yes, Kali, goddess Kali, is the time energy by which he, you know, Mayadhyakshena Prakriti. He's supervising everything, but he's not personally involved with it. In fact, she can't, it's said that she can't stand in front of him. He has to be, for Kali to do her illusion magic tricks, Krishna has to be withdrawn. Like, nescience is darkness and Godhead is light. So as soon as light enters, the darkness has to leave. So for darkness to do her magic of bewildering all the materialists, or all the sense enjoyers, or all the non-devotees, then Krishna has to give her the opportunity to bewilder them. So he is functioning along with his time energy to carry out that illusory process, but he's not he's just supervising it.
So you made the distinction that was the universal form saying time and then.
Yes.
Okay. Now also here, he says, the Supreme Lord then simultaneously entered into the Pradhan, would we say 23 elements with the goddess Kali, whereas otherwise we hear he impregnates that Pradhan.
So actually it's the Mahatattva, right? The Pradhan is in this state of equilibrium. Am I getting that right, you scholars?
Yeah. When it manifests, Pradhan manifests from Mahatattva.
But when, yeah, so when it actually becomes, when the modes start to become a little agitated, then it becomes Mahatattva. Then he inserts the jivas who've lying dormant during the cataclysm, he inserts them back into the nature. So that's like he's impregnating material nature with living souls. But also he enters into the, as the three Purushas, well, as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who fills the water up in the universe, and Lord Brahma sprouts from his navel, he becomes like the soul of the universe, and then he becomes the soul of every soul when he impregnates her, and he comes along with each soul, and he facilitates their enjoyment. He's the overseer and committer, Upadrashtana Mintacha. I don't know if I'm answering you.
Yeah, but still it's... enters with the goddess Kali.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right there
in the
Brahma
Samhita.
He doesn't
impregnate the goddess Kali.
Well, he's doing two things. He's impregnating her with the jivas, and that will be probably discussed in the next few verses. And he's also getting the allowing the material elements to be conglomerated. Remember, non-application of the conglomerating process is because of their separate existence. And then Goddess Kali is the conglomerating principle which allows these things. And we should understand that these things are different. They're just elements. Like, you know, you say there's so much gold, and we have so much iron in the world, and then so much iron in our bodies and things like that. So every soul is going to have coverings of false ego and these five knowledge acquiring senses and so forth. But there's also these elements that are out there, and they become like the body of the universal thing.
So can we say that if he impregnates after he enters with God's form, and then he impregnates all of that?
But he's not going to impregnate directly through Shiva, because Shiva will not.
By the glance. Well, his glance impregnates her, and the glance is Shiva. And the function of Shiva is in relation to the function of Shambhu in relation to Shiva is that the material universe is created by Shiva, right?
Yeah.
But so as far as the timing, I think if I recall correctly, the description in these first like 10 verses of this chapter is not exactly in chron order. And I think if you read the fifth chapter of the second canto, you'll get a better sort of what comes first, what comes next. But, you know, because like there's these devas that are, you know, the false ego and the motive, that's the last chapter, but the false ego and the motive goodness creates these devas who are associated, I think there's 10 specific devas associated with each other working in the knowledge acquiring senses. And, we see something over here. I don't know if I'm rambling because I am a little jet lagged.
It's coming at the reconciliation of this is all happening externally or internally, because like Vaishnavas are all internalized, right? So it's like the source is inside us.
But there really is
not. Or is there an outside source as well? In other words, beyond all the universe is the source, or is it through inside that this is the source?
I'm not sure I'm understanding your question, but...
Well, I mean, I guess...
You're talking about the creation of...
I mean, in some spiritual schools, it's like for example, Taoists or externalists. They just look at nature, yin and yang, whereas internalists only believe what's inside their heart, their soul. In other words, the only way they can understand this the source is by going inside, not... It's not like some outside...
So the way I answer it is there is an external world. In fact, there's numberless universes. But the worlds are created for the use of conscious jivas, which have their own internal life. But their consciousness is impure, and so they're not perceiving things as they really are. But like, you know, if materialistic people say, you know, that there's all these planets out there, and maybe there's life on one of them or something like that. We say, of course there's life. There's life everywhere we look. On this planet, wherever we go, in the volcano, in the freezing, you know, Antarctica, we find living beings in every condition. And it's because creation is meant for the rectification or a place for them to enjoy their particular quality of illusion. But there really is an external world that is an interior creation, but it really is connected to Krishna. So it's not, if we see it properly, we are in the spiritual world also. Let me say this. We spiritualize it, like whatever food we eat, we first offer it to Krishna. And that makes it spiritualized. All these flowers and the incense that we offer, it spiritualizes it. It's part of the process that we then come in contact through the spiritual master and through the deities and the devotional service that we do. We come in contact with the internal energy of Krishna. But there's also an external energy which is always sort of inviting us to forget Krishna. And so the process of devotional service, at least in the beginning stages, is to always remember him, never forget him, give up the sense that there's any progress or any value in anything that's not related to his devotional service. That's the process of surrender. You know, whatever's favorable for devotional service, accept it. Whatever's unfavorable, reject it. All right, go ahead.
No.
I didn't understand.
I guess my question is, if you're looking for a source, Krishna, mm-hmm. is he inside of us or is he outside of the material creation?
That's what I was saying before about him being both. He's immanent. Immanent means he's in everything. That he's the soul of our soul, that super soul. And then he's also transcendent, which means that he has no mundane characteristics. Everything about him is completely pure. And actually the super soul is one of his expansions, a portion of a plenary portion.
But the super soul's inside, like you're pointing inside.
Yeah.
So the super soul's inside, not outside.
Right.
Yeah. The super soul,
he's inside every atom. So the super soul, sheer reduction. But the super soul comes along. The super soul comes along with the bewildered entities and sits beside them as they experience the illusion of being separate from him. But the super soul also has a planet in the material world called Shvetadvipa, and he's residing there as the lord of the maintainer of everything. Yeah. Well, he is the source.
Once and they're all one. The way of trying to make it separate is the source.
So the thing is, like the light of one candle, although it burns separately in other candles, you know, you can light other candles with it, and they still burn with the same potency, although there's still an original candle, and that original candle is Krishna, and he doesn't have anything to do. He's just playing. Krishna's just enjoying himself with his devotees, and all these loving exchanges in an intimate way. But then he has different expansions. First he expands into Balaram, and Balaram expands into the... And all this is explained to Sanatana Goswami in the 23rd chapter, I think, Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. But there's quadruple expansions, and there's a Narayan, and there's the different Narayans who are... But there are all these different swangsha, they're called his own form. And they're all identical. They're all him. They're not different. So if you think that there's a supreme being, why does he have to have only one form? You know, and some people say, well, how can you say that God has a form, because God is infinite? And if he's infinite, how can he be here and not there? And isn't he everywhere? If he's everywhere, can he not have a form? And you say, how can you say that he doesn't have a form? Even you have a form. That he has a form, and not only a form, but he has unlimited forms. But they're not like our forms. They're not under the control of material nature like God is telling you. So these infinite forms are spiritual transcendental forms. And the original one is Krishna, who plays a flute and has a peacock feather on his head. And the super soul is an expansion of him that he undertakes for creating the material world. He feels incomplete that there are living entities who aren't serving him in the spiritual world, and he creates a material world to give them an opportunity to come back to him again. But he also gives them free will and an opportunity to forget him. And as super soul, I see I've gone over my time, but as super soul, he facilitates that. He maintains everyone, and he permits everything to happen. And he does it in this amazing way that everything happens just right. That, you know, millions of complicated, nobody could calculate, you know, all the different variables and, you know, but whatever happens is under the supervision and direction of super soul, like they say, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the wind. Okay? I think that we're out of time. Any final, just a final? Huh? Yeah. We're transcendental. We're out of time.
Can you also say something?
Sure. Well, we could keep talking. Is there some? Is there some, like, someone has to go do service or something? Anyone who has to leave can, of course, leave.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. So, Prabhu, I want to understand a contradiction, like, you know, in Srila Prabhupada's purpose. Like, you know, in the class today, you have used illusion many times. And actually, the basic difference between Advaitins, like Shankara's philosophy, and Advaitins, like Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Vallabhacharya, us, like, you know, Vaishnavas, is that we believe that the world is real, it's not an illusion. But Shankara says this world, this Maya, is an illusion. So basically, when we use the term illusory energy or illusion, we start supporting Mayavad.
It's Vivartavad versus Mayavad. And we say that there's also an illusion, but there's a real rope that we think is a snake. And they think the snake isn't there. There's no such snake, you know.
That's a classic example given by Shankara himself. The snake analogy, like snake and rope, is just Shankara's classic. Another one of that movies that was like Ghatakash, Ghatakash, like, you know, like the teacher, you know, like sky, like, you know, so that's kind of typical. Yes. So we are sort of like giving Shankara's example to prove.
Shankara himself, Shankaracharya, of course, is, you know, perfect transcendental. He says Narayana Parovyakta, you know, that actually Lord Narayana exists before the material creation, and or beyond the material creation. And it's really a lot of the, of course, he, you know, in Puranas it describes that he's, you know, an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He says that he's going to descend in Kali Yuga to preach a kind of covered Buddhism, you know, but it's his followers and their commentaries that get into the, you know, completely offensive just denial of the form, of the eternal form of God. And, you know, Lord Chaitanya says, Mayavadi, Shunya Akarapish. What is it? Mayavadi Hoy? Mayavadi Basha, what? Aparad. What is it? Mayavadi Basha, Saranas. But he also says it's a terrible offense because they're trying to cut off all the limbs of Vishnu.
Her question is that whether this world is illusion or it's a real illusion.
The world is real, that's the point. That he really creates these elements and they really exist. They can't move without him, but they're really there. But we don't see that, therefore we can use them in his service. If they weren't real, what would be the point of offering him a flower? We're offering him a real flower. But if we're trying to offer the flower to our girlfriend instead, we're not seeing what the flower is for. We're misunderstanding the flower as being permanent when it's really temporary.
Well, things like we use the word illusion differently
than the flower. Yes. They're saying it's just like it's unreal, like it has no substance at all. And we're saying it has a substance because it's Krishna's illusory energy. But it's the illusory energy because it's a place where it's established in such a way by Krishna's deluding time potency so that people can see it as if it's not connected to Krishna, even though it has to be connected to Krishna. So Krishna both is everything, and at the same time, not everything is Krishna. So I always meet these people on book distribution things that say, why should I go to a temple? Why should I read the book? God is everywhere. God is me. I'm in that tree. The tree is God. You know, but they're not seeing God. So Krishna explains that in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says, you know, that I am the, you know, I am the offering. I am the sacrifice. I'm all these things. I am, you know, I give forth the heat, he says, whatever devas you actually worship, you're really worshiping me, but if you don't really see me in it, then you're going to fall down. If you don't come to the point of actually understanding actual Krishna, then yanti deva vata devan pitti yanti pitti vata, you know, those who worship the devas go to live with the devas, and, you know, it's not, but if you worship Krishna, you come to him. So he's saying, you know, you're worshiping him the wrong way, but you're actually worshiping him. Which is very different from the, you know, sort of the angry, jealous God of the Abrahamic religion who says, how dare you worship anybody but me. Krishna says, worship the Deva, sure, that's in the mode of goodness, but if you're trying to get something material out of it, then your intelligence has been stolen away by illusion. You're thinking, I'll get something worthwhile without just getting the pleasure of Krishna, you know, pleasing Krishna. That's the only thing that's really worthwhile for a pure devotee. So yes, we're using illusion in a different way from the Mahavan. They say there's nothing really there. And we're saying it's something there, but you're misunderstanding what it is. So what is, so tell me, because Shankaracharya says, and the snake and the rope example is his example, so what does he mean by the rope? What is the rope? Is it a formless thing? What is it?
The rope is coming from yourself. Like, the rope is a manifestation of your mind. Like, it's coming from your mind. Your mind is making a mistake, like you're false.
So what's the snake in that? It was, for like 50 years or something, it was the dominant paradigm, and, you know, he defeated the occult scientists. Yeah. I associate that argument with Anselm, although if Descartes, he worked on Anselm's ontological argument, which, by the way, I identify with the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that when Krishna says, if in any category of things, whatever is the best represents me and is me, then there has to be me, because I'm the best of everything. That, you know, as long as you understand that conception of God as being the best of everything, then it has to exist, because
it's...
Should we end there?
Yeah, end this question.